Welcome to Urban Lifestyle Cafe, episode 13. Good afternoon. Welcome to Urban Lifestyle Cafe. I'm your dreadlock connoisseur, Michael, and I'm here with Alicia.
Hello, people.
And today we're going to talk about, like we said from our previous podcast, Fences. So this was a remarkable play that was turned into a motion picture by Denzel Washington. The playwright August Wilson, which does a lot of his actual writing out of Pittsburgh. So if you really go back and see who it was and what he's done in the past, he does a lot of plays based on African-American experiences and mm-hmm. race relationships mm-hmm. during that time period, which was really, really cool, which is back in the 1950s. He won a Tony Award for Best Play. Mm-hmm. As well as a Pulitzer Prize for drama. So Fences wind up to be something on our Oscar blacklist. Mm-hmm. You know, this year, at least we have an Oscar blacklist, which we'll say, okay, this one was nominated and this one, and we have at least four nominated black movies that we said we're going to see. So one of them absolutely was Hidden Figures. Fences and Moonlight, and I think there's one other one, but we'll
Fences, go back around. Fences, Hidden Figures, Moonlight. I think that was it.
Maybe that's it.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll just pick up one just for the hell of it then. But right now it was those threes. But we just finished seeing Fences, which was directed by Denzel Washington, and he's in the starring role with the most amazing actress that's acting right now, mm-hmm. Viola Davis.
Yes, Viola is amazing.
So it's almost anything she touches right now, she dives in and says, I'm going to be this person. So Fences, what is this Fences? So Fences is basically about a 53-year-old sanitation worker that used to be at the top of his game, a ex-baseball player that was in the Negro League and was trying to get into the major leagues, but couldn't quite get there because he, as you see in the movie, he went to jail but still practiced his craft. But when he got out, he felt that he didn't get an opportunity because he was an African-American player and they didn't let the Negroes in, and it just goes from there. And then you see his life and his hardships from prior to that up to today with him and his wife and his son. And then when we see through the movie that he also had another son. So when we walk into there, we saw, I think you saw it a little more clearly, the kind of diversity and the layers of different things that were going on with the dialogue, Alicia.
Yeah, the movie was, oh. You do hear me. I'm just overwhelmed with this movie because it was deep.
Absolutely.
And it wasn't that tearjerker kind of movie. This movie was deep. And it wasn't about, it had everything to do about the family. Everything to do about the family. You know, you have bits and pieces, just like, you know, you have bits and pieces talk about discrimination, racism, so forth, so on. But it was just, at this point, me discussing it, my mind just keeps spinning and thinking about the whole movie.
Because it races. There's no one area to jump into without going into something from like a previous part. You know, you can start at the beginning, but what you relate from the beginning, you have to talk about it maybe an hour into the actual movie.
Yeah.
But, you know, the big conflict that that I think they premise the whole movie on is him being an ex-baseball player that he failed on, and his son is trying to be a football player and has the opportunity to be a football player.
Right.
And get, I think, not drafted, but recruited into going to a college.
Yeah.
And his father basically pushes back and said, no, you're not going to do that. You're going to get a job and have a
Yeah, because
a craft.
He felt that his father felt that he was not going to be successful. He was going, the white man is going to hold you down.
Right.
And it's that mental, it was everything that he went through.
He felt that his son was going to go through the same thing.
And it was almost like he, as a father, he was pulling him, he'll hold him back and pulling him down. But really he was
trying to protect him.
Right. That and basically based on his experience of how he.
But what he went through.
Right. Exactly.
But then you can say on another hand that he was jealous that he's getting an opportunity. And he assumed that because he didn't get the opportunity, his son wouldn't get an opportunity. Then you may say, well, he was jealous that his son is able to do things that he wasn't able to do. Because, you know, we talk about family. And the thing throughout this movie, we saw portions of our family, portions of our family's family.
Yep.
And things in that matter. Because
external family.
Yep. He grew up in an era that our aunts, uncles, grandparents actually went in, where the male was dominant and whatever said goes. It also was, you know, you don't talk about certain things. You don't show that kind of emotion. Emotion is reserved to the women in the family.
It's not reserved
for the men. So the men will have an emotional conversation, but they would always have to jump off. And I think Denzel did an amazing job with the dialogue that jumps back and forth that was emotional, but you see how the character tried to draw away from being emotional. Other than anger, that was the only true emotion that the male father actually possessed that you would see. But you see that he was struggling. Every day he was struggling with death. And the metaphor was fences. They were building a fence throughout the whole movie. So he was building these fences up against everyone. You know, his wife, his child, his friends, his other children. Because we find that he had another son that only came around on payday just to get a little money.
Right.
But you didn't realize that his other child that he never helped raise, but as the dialogue goes in, you find out that he was in jail throughout most of his childhood.
The oldest child.
The oldest child.
Yeah.
He was in jail for 15 to 16 years.
And he explained, while he was telling his story about his situation, his son, his oldest son, sat there and listened to him.
Yeah. He didn't even tell him directly.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Because he already, in his oldest son, mine, had already put in his mind that his father was no good and you were basically out of my life. So you don't even know what my childhood was about.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that you know, you just don't hear. You're not just hearing it in the movie, but you hear it in a lot of males' lives.
Mm-hmm.
Until his father explained to him, well, and it, like you said, it was just out of the blue. He explained it to him.
But again, he didn't explain it to him. He was telling a story about his life when he was coming up from Mobile, Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying that, you know, he was explaining about his life and he was fighting with his father and he knew he had to leave. And he walked 200 miles from where he lived to Mobile, Alabama. And his son was like, you didn't walk no 200 miles. He was like, yes, I did.
Yes, yes.
You know,
exactly.
I did it, but I got caught up with some criminal activity and blah, blah, blah. And he was telling a story, and within the story, he basically said he was jailed for killing someone who was trying to rob. He was trying to rob him, and the guy pulled out a gun, and he pulled out a knife. But when he got shot in his chest, and everybody just like, wow. And then he said, but I stabbed him. But he's the one that died.
Yeah.
He said, but I went to jail for that. And for the last 15 years, you know, that's where I was. You know, so I wasn't for 15 years. And your mother took off and decided to do something else with her life. And so that's where I was when she was raising you. And you can see the expressions and everything about, wow. He was like, I never heard this. And it's funny because, you know, even when I had to sit down with my son, when I start telling him about my relationships when I used to live in the Bronx, he was like, wow, you just never said that. And, you know, and as fathers and as parents, sometimes you don't talk about certain things, not because you don't want to talk about it. It's because it's just not in the common conversation.
Right, it is. Because, you know, even with our children, there are just certain things that when we sat down and talked to them as
children,
as adults, we sit them, they were older, and we could have that discussion on how our life was when they were younger. And they just didn't understand just certain things. They just automatically assumed that, okay, you're parents, and it doesn't matter. Y'all should have done it anyway. And the thing was that now that they are parents, they understand a little bit more to just certain things that you just not going to openly talk about to your children at a certain age. That's just not going to happen.
But I'm not even looking at it that way. I'm looking at it, the fact that there's no reason to talk about there's something that I've done in the Bronx that I've plugged up my DJ equipment into a street light. And I wasn't doing it for the money. I was doing it for an art because I really felt that I wanted to do something to stand out. But it never came up because there was no need to actually talk about it. And then when they say, well, you didn't do this for me, okay, well, I didn't know that was a concern.
Yeah, because you
so
know, you
kind of let me explain that.
Yeah, and because you heard the younger son said that. You know, you didn't do nothing for me. What did you do for me? And you know, that's what, which was so like, such a slap in the face.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for him to say that.
But it's funny because that was based back in the '50s, but this happened in the 2000s. You know,
it happens
when the child
now.
Was like, well, you didn't
it
do anything.
It still happens
for me.
Now.
And, you're saying this.
You're saying,
hey, you haven't done anything. Okay, so when you got a vehicle, when you didn't have a vehicle, we gave you that. Yeah, but you know, I struggled. No, yeah, I gave you a place to stay, but you didn't want to stay because you wanted to do what you wanted. Yeah, but and I'll lend you $2,000 to do this, but you never paid me back, but you never said you was going to do anything about that. Yeah, but you don't remember those things because as children, a lot of times, they're not thinking about what you have to do. So like what you were saying, Leisha, is when you have your own children, you kind of say, damn, I have to do this. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but us having three children, two girls, one boy. The two girls have four kids each. Mm-hmm. And I remember, because, you know, you don't talk to the girls like I do, but I remember them saying, I would not have done that. I would not do that to my child. And I'm like, before you open up your mouth and say that, you best to remember, you best to understand, you ain't there yet. You ain't there yet. And so, even though the mom's being, listen, you need to sign that goddamn paperwork so this boy can go to college. You know, you need to get off of him and leave him alone. Let him, you know, work the weekends and so he can go to college and get this football opportunity. And yet his father prevented him from getting that opportunity. And that young man's anger then trickled down to where he tried to confront his father.
Because and then his he father separated himself.
Yeah, and when he confronted his father said, no, get the hell out of my house. No, you ain't coming to my house with that kind of attitude.
But the thing is, what she didn't like it, but she understood if a child is going to be disrespectful in that way, I can't do anything about it because her husband actually paid everything in the house and took care of everything. But, you know, like my son to this point, you know, questions certain things of, you know, why doesn't people see it this way? Why doesn't, okay, let's talk about it now. Because in my household, we ain't got time to talk about it. It's about what are you doing with your life? So my whole effort as you living in my house is to move you forward. And even though, you know, the character in Fences didn't really spend the time to talk to them in a way to get them to understand, he still pushed them to say, oh, no, you're going to learn to work. And you ain't going to lie to me and say you're working and you're really not working. oh, you're not going to lie to me saying one thing when I told you what to do, and you're not going to do that. And, you know, he always used the baseball analogies to kind of justify everything that he does. You know, even when he wind up having a baby by another woman, she was like, we're not freaking talking about baseball. So stop it. Stop talking about baseball.
Yeah, I mean, that
this is not fucking baseball.
But that was another thing. That was just another part of the issue was his head was his big head. To me, he was just he was a big goddamn head. Talking about, well, even though I'm the man of the house, I still should do what the hell I want to do. And so, you know, even though this is the situation, you know, I just need my time. I just need my break. And she was like, hold up a second. You? What about me? What have I done? What, I put a lot of shit on the side for myself, for you.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't understand that.
Because he didn't want to hear it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and he looked at it like, no, that's not what I'm talking about. You're not listening to what I'm saying. And she was like, no, you're not listening to what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you pleased or you're not going to change anything you do, then maybe you need to get out of here. Maybe you need to go where you're happy.
Yeah. I mean, it was, and the oldest son, and let's talk about the oldest son.
Mm, the one that was the musician.
Yeah. I mean, I knew there was something wrong with him. I mean, you could, he's like, I want to be that, you know, and haven't we heard this? Oh my Lord. I don't want to work for the white man.
Yeah, I'm not.
I want to be my own. Be
pushing no trash. If I got to do that, I might as well do. You know, I wasn't raised to be this way or that way. And you're like, come on, man, this dude, who are you hanging with?
Yeah,
and we find out, you know, in the end, he went to prison because he was stealing. He was slowly stealing from people just to get his money, just to have his freedom. But freedom isn't taking from other people.
Right.
But he kind of learned that. And then as he got older, he kind of understood some of the lessons that his father actually told him about. Even though, you know, like most children find out later on, it's not how they said, what was the lessons underneath that said, let me prepare you for what you should and shouldn't be doing.
Exactly.
And that's what a lot of the dialogue, and the dialogue was just fantastic. Because, you know, it was in a play setting. So you will see small areas in the backyard, and they would have the dialogue back and forth. They have a dialogue in the kitchen, the dialogue in the front living room, sitting at the dining room, outside the front door.
Yeah, I know. I mean, yeah, oh.
And you said it too. You said even it touched a mental illness.
It did touch on the mental illness part because And even in my family, in my layers of family, we had dealt with mental illness several times over. My mom's told me my grandmother had it. My grandmother had mental illness, where my grandfather had to put her into a mental institution, and he had to raise the girls until she came out. And then dealing with the fact that my aunt had mental illness. So, I mean, it's just, it was all through my family. And then seeing it in the movie made it so for real. You know what I'm saying? It just made it so for real. You know what I'm saying?
That reality of it happens to anyone. Not certain people. Not that segment of society.
Mm-hmm.
It happens everywhere. And then, you know, what made that interesting was, you know, Denzel was still saying, he's all right. He don't need to be in no hospital. Let him be free. Let him be free. But every time he just let him out, he was being arrested. He had to pay to get him out. And then he kind of, you know, almost underhandedly saying one thing, but actually had his brother committed to a hospital.
Right, right.
Because it was, you can see it was pressure on him trying to do something about that. And that was his only sibling when he left his family. He was the only one that he knew and he kept contact with. So that was his only family outside the family that he actually created. Which I thought that the mental illness and that's the reality. We had an uncle that was, you know, the uncle that goes into the back room. Oh, mm-hmm. that's Uncle such and such, mm-hmm. and he's in the back room. And we always go back and visit him, and he would talk about Vietnam and how messed up it was. But he, you see, he was just chilling. He'll sit there, smoke his weed, and just chill. Never really had a, you know, uplifting conversation, because you saw the undertones of what he was going through internally was a sense of depression or right. some psychotic breakdown, that he was always going back to the hospital. They said, so where's Uncle David at now? And he was like, ah, he had to go back to the hospital. And we was like, oh, okay. But we never understood as children mental illness.
Right.
And then, you know, family always say, oh, that's just how they are. Oh, that's just how they are. Oh, she crazy. Oh, your mama's crazy like that. Don't worry about it. But they never, we don't, as black people, we don't address the mental illness as an illness.
Yeah, because it's, but the thing is that, you know, it's all about the system when it comes to mental illness. I know too many times that, you know, my aunt been put in the hospital and given medication, and knowing that as long as she take the medication and she look like she's being normal, they release her. You know, and we have seen too many situations where, or hear of many situations, or seen read articles, seen news stuff on it. Well, a lot of times, once you put them on a medication, they can take themselves off, you know, saying that they don't need it anymore. So it's a lot about the mental part of this. I mean, it was just, I just thought it was amazing how they just put in the story so well. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
He added a lot of different layers and aspects in it without focusing on it. But I'm going to go back to what you said from the beginning, the racial portion, going back to like even Hidden Figures. They didn't make it the focal point of the story. You know, like some stories, the focal point is what white people has done to black people. And they make that a really focal point.
Yeah.
But these two movies showed racism in spite of. Because there's a portion in Troy complained about why all these black sanitation workers are just throwing away the trash and we're not drivers. And he had to go see the superintendent, and they was like, look, I wouldn't complain. You lose your job, boy. You're going to lose your job.
Well, and see, he followed the process.
Yeah, but it don't matter.
Yeah,
because in the world of racism, the process doesn't work for black people.
Yeah, but okay, so he really, from what I seen, okay, let me say it this way, from what I seen is that he submitted the proper paperwork to ask that question. He didn't sound like he went in there all gung-ho, you know, starting some mess.
Nobody said that though.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying from what I seen, because like you said, everybody around him was saying he was going to get fired.
Well, but why do you think they said that though?
I wasn't thinking that way. I was thinking in the fact that, okay, so because he was a black man, he didn't follow the pro. Because he was a black man, and he asked the question, and they told him to submit that form to the union. And the union then addressed the issue and gave him an answer.
Oh, they sent it up to the superintendent.
Right. But they still followed the process. Mm-hmm. I mean, he didn't go in there acting a fool.
Yeah, that's not the question. So what I'm saying to you is when you said, I don't think he would have got fired anyway, that wasn't what the movie showed you. The movie showed everyone thinking he was going to get fired.
Right. And he just, but also the
it's
movie.
But let me finish. So what I'm saying is, it doesn't matter what you think. It's what they were thinking. And the reason why they were thinking that way is black people never get an opportunity. So when you complain, the first thing black people would thought back in that day was, we don't want your Negroes complaining, so you're going to get fired. So in their mind, that's what they thought.
Okay.
But the process is the process. So you haven't lived in the 50s. I haven't lived in the 50s. I haven't worked in the 60s. I was a child during the 60s. I never saw when we actually had to take a bus down to Virginia that we always went to the back. I didn't know we had to go to the back. That was the difference. So to me, being naive, oh, we go to the back, so we have fun in the back. But we had to go to the back. So that was oblivious in my mind that the requirement, if you go through these states and you go into the South, oh yeah, you sitting in the back of the bus.
Yeah, but
Negroes.
No, but the thing is that this is, I was looking at it as the with the movie, the flow of the movie, because it was showing, for me, it showed that even though he felt that he that if he get fired, he didn't care if he get fired, I had to speak out.
Yeah.
It showed that as a black man, he still overcome it and was successful. But yet he still said the white man was bad.
Yeah.
When the white man just gave him an opportunity.
No, but the so legally they gave him an opportunity. So think about this. This is still in Pennsylvania, which is north of the Mason-Dixie line. So they was giving black people opportunities. That still doesn't think that there was equal opportunity. Because for the longest, think about it, there was no black drivers. So why would he be the first black driver? So everyone figured, keep things the way they were. Don't make no mess, because you're going to make some mess with us. So it's still in society today where black people said, don't say that. Ain't nothing going to happen. If you say something, ain't nothing going to happen. You're just going to make it worse for all of us. You know, that black mentality that says, leave it the way it is. Just don't make a fuss. I believe that's what they thought was going to happen. He even thought that. But to your point, he even said, if I lose my job, I lose my job. I'm going to have to deal with it. But he was strong. He had his the way he thought and in his heart and his way of thinking was, it didn't really matter. Everybody else thought that was dumb to do that. He's like, hell no. Yeah, no, I ain't even got a license. He didn't even have a driver's license, but he said, I don't give a damn.
Yeah, they offered me the job. But then again, and the reason why I'm saying it this way is because it showed that he was a middle class family. You know? And they also, he dealt with the struggle. He knew that even though he would make some noise about the situation, it was the fact that he did make it known that there was an issue. And with that, he got a promotion out of it.
But he was just an outspoken black man.
Yeah.
That's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. I don't think that was the central core of the play or the movie. It wasn't that he was speaking out for the wrongs of the black man. He was speaking out because white people are fucked up. That's how he looked at it.
Yeah,
because that's
course.
How he went through the system as he went from the that South all the way up.
Yeah,
exactly.
That was his life.
That was his life.
But now with Viola, who played his wife, she was very humbling to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because she just, like, she let him run his mouth. And, you know, I mean, she was right there. I mean, either way, even though he was the hardworking man, he still gave her the money.
Because he knew he couldn't. He knows she was the stability in his life.
Yeah.
He knew that. Even though, in his mind, he was the man. He was the man. That's it. But the stability in his life was her.
Yeah.
And, you know, you ask her, I ain't going to give it to you. You know, when his son was asking for the money, he's like, I'm not going to give it to you. You go to her. You know, he didn't even say go to her. She knew what she had to do.
Yeah, because even when he was having an affair, he said, I don't have nothing. I give you everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
But to her, she had to take care of him.
Yep.
So even though he gave the money and everything to her, she knew he still controlled it from that point. And then she was like, okay, you know, after this affair, I'm done. You know, we'll be together, but we're not going to have a relationship no more.
Yeah.
We're done.
She said, now you're womanless.
Yeah. So I was can't like, have a childless. I can't have a child without a mother, but you'll be womanless.
Yep. Yep.
You know, from that point.
And that to me, just like, wow.
So again, the metaphor of fences, he built fences around himself that people couldn't get in. You know, so if you see throughout the movie, the fences is the metaphor of him building that. And then once the fence was built and he locked himself in, you know, even though they fast forward 7 years later, he died. You know, and even the dialogue at the end, you see that he even talked about his son. that was in the military.
Yeah.
He talked about him to his daughter.
Yep, he sure did.
So regardless of the way he
felt. You skipped the part because, remember, you know, he came, the woman he was having an affair with died giving birth.
Right. So, you know.
And so with.
Okay, so wait a minute. Right before that.
Okay.
He was like, I'm going to have to go to the hospital to see her. And she was like, really? You know, that's what I'm going to do. So he was still strong-headed and bull-headed. And his ego was out there. I'm the man. I'm going to do what I want to do. Mm-hmm. And then the phone rang in the middle of the night. And he got up. And
she got up. Went down them stairs.
And said, oh, your baby was born. And he was like, okay, I got to go. I got to see how she's doing. She was like, she didn't make it. She died giving birth. And, you know, he physically kind of broke down. He wasn't going to show, you know, any tears or whatever. Because, once again, that time, a man cannot do that. But you see, the energy just dropped out of him.
Yeah, it took out of him.
And you see, he stumbled off. And then he knew that in his mind, death was trying to get to him, but death went outside of him just to make him weaker.
Yeah, and he was, I mean, that to me was very powerful too, where he's like, oh, you're close.
Yeah, but come see me.
Yeah, come see me.
All of this around is, no, come see me.
And I mean,
when you're ready to come see me, come see me.
And I can kind of understand in that situation where he was coming from too.
What's that?
That was a very powerful part where, you know, it's almost like he was saying, you didn't have to take her. You could have took me.
But Death laughed at him because he was like, you think you're just going to do what you want to do? You're going to have a wife. You're going to have a family. You're going to have a child. You're going to, So I'm going to make you suffer through this. Mm-hmm. And, but he fought, but he was so stubborn on everything throughout this movie. He was such a stubborn man. And he was telling Death, so you ready to get me? I don't care.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, come see me. You don't come after anybody else. Come see me.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a powerful portion, too. So throughout the movie, you can see that that would probably be one of the highlights in the play, where he stood alone and had a portion to speak out. And that was just a powerful portion. In the movie, you can't see that because there's a whole background, there's a window, it's all that. But on a stage, you stand alone, and you have to call out on your own. So I can imagine the power that was coming out from that.
Yeah, yeah. And with Viola, she was a strong woman to have taken, you know, she's like, like when he said the child was innocent. Mm-hmm. And she said,
the sins of the father, I can't blame the child for that. This is an innocent child.
Yeah. And then she's like, yeah, just what she said. Yeah, she is. You're right. She is. I'll take her. I'll be her mother. But you ain't going to have no, you said you're womanless. Mm-hmm.
And she showed that regardless of what he was doing, what he was saying, and I think his other child said something, I'm paraphrasing, I don't remember exactly what he said, but it was basically, you're going to have to take the good with the bad. You're going to have bad, but you're going to have good. You're always going to have them both, no matter what. Mm-hmm. That's what you're going to have to deal with.
Yeah, because he was telling his brother that, younger brother.
Yeah, he was telling his brother. Yeah. I don't know the exact words, but right. Again, I'm paraphrasing, and you're going to have to take the bad with the good, and that's how he lived his life. He did it that way.
Yeah.
And it was so strong and profound, and you can see what everybody kind of went through that circled around Troy, and it was really powerful. So this is a powerful, emotional, but like you said, not a tearjerker, but something that grabbed you. Probably family wise, relationship wise,
everything. Because the only everything. I think the part that really, I mean, the one I cried. I mean, I cried a little bit. Now it wasn't enough. Like, it wasn't like Hidden Figures, but that part when he told her, when his boy told him, dude, you're gonna have to tell her something. You know, I seen what you've been doing. You know, buying her a drink here, a drink there, And he said, now you need to make your decision on who you want.
Or what you're going to do.
Or what you're going to do.
You can't have them both.
Yeah. And so when he walked, though, he's such a man that he was to walk up in there and just tell her that, almost like it's no shame. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was like no shame, no embarrassment, you know, not realizing.
But he held up his, but that was only reason he told her in that way is because he decided to not humble himself. He decided to say, as a man, I'm going to tell you. To your point, as a man, I'm going to tell you. Not as I'm going to humble myself and ask for forgiveness. He wasn't asking for forgiveness. He was stating what happened. Mm-hmm. And even when she said, so you're not going to see her again? You're not going to stop me from... She was like, oh, I'm done. You know, I'm done.
Yeah.
You're out of your mind.
Yeah, I mean, that's where it's like, wow. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, and like you said, we going back, we're talking about back in those days. Mm-hmm. And the women just didn't up and leave.
No. Because they set them, they didn't set themselves up. Society set them up in a way to say, the man is going to take care of you. You still have that today. You just don't have it as much. A woman can walk out and find a job.
Right.
You know, before it wasn't like they were hiring women anywhere. Right. So the options for women working was really very low. And mothers were telling daughters, find a man to take care of you.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. You still have that today. But, you know, back then it was really prevalent. Find a man to take care of you. So what they did was handle the household. I'm going to control the finances. I'm going to make sure this is right. Because when he goes out and work, he shouldn't have to worry about anything.
Yeah,
but bringing money home. Bring home the bacon, as the cliche says.
Right.
That's what the man's job was supposed to do, and to be the head of the household.
Right.
Where the woman took care of everything else. And when you stop doing that, and then, you know, society and positions changed and all that, it changed. But looking at this story, there was no change.
Yeah, it was no change. I mean, you saw the surroundings. I mean, like I said, I love the little
subtleties and everything.
Yeah, yeah, that brought me back to my mom, my grandma's kitchen. It was just amazing. You know, the old Hunt's ketchup. Was it Heinz? Heinz ketchup.
Yep, Heinz ketchup.
Heinz ketchup, Crisco can, the Crisco can near the stove, and the old fixtures, light fixtures, the lamps, the way the dining room was set. You know, you sat at the table with your family and ate. Mm-hmm. I mean, the setting of the table, the seeing grandma make the biscuits. Let me
make you some biscuits.
Yeah, the big ones. Yeah, the big biscuits, babe. I'll make you some big old biscuits. I mean, it was just so comfortable. That's another thing too. It did. The movie made you comfortable. It almost made you be a part of his life as a family, because you sat there. It's like I was there when she was, you know, she was making them biscuits, and I'm sitting there, you know, what she put the butter. Look what she got, the butter out the refrigerator. She had the flour in her hand, you know.
The bowl. She was mixing it through the bowl.
Yes, the glass bowls. Mm-hmm. I mean, so. It was just an amazing movie. So one thing that we did miss is the relationship with the neighbor.
What neighbor?
The guy with the garbage, other garbage guy.
Oh, what's his name? Bono, I think.
I believe so.
Sure.
But the relationship between them. Because at the end, he really brought to his attention was, now that you're a driver, we don't even see you.
No
yeah,
more. Yeah, I don't see you no more. He said, "Well, I'm in the white neighborhoods now, driving there." He said, "Yeah, you don't come around. You don't do all that." So he lost that relationship because, once again, and this is where, you know, when you're watching a movie, pick up on all these metaphors, the fences. Once again, he built a different fence between him and his best friend.
Yeah.
Again, you know, he did it with his wife. He did it with his son. He did it with everyone. He built fences up to everyone. And he did not realize that. And he locked himself within that. So Bono was there before he got married. He rolled with him on everything. But once he started, and after he told him, look, dude, you know what you're doing. I see what you're doing. You can say whatever you want to say, but you need to make this right. You know, I don't want to get between both of you. I love both of y'all, but dude, you got to make this right.
Yeah.
And he said, if this was me, you would have came to me, you know? And Troy said, yeah, I get it. You know, if it was you, you would expect me to tell you. He said, absolutely.
Yeah.
So you about to do something.
Yeah. I mean, at the bar when he just say, hey, have a drink. Nah, I can't.
Nah.
Yeah.
He was like, nah.
I can't.
I'm good.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
He said, just come by. And he was like, I'll come by.
Yeah, I'll come by.
But, and you didn't hear the sincerity in his voice.
You sure did.
Because it was kind of like, I think that portion of my life is over because of what I've done.
Yeah.
He knew he did everything to everybody. But his male ego was kind of still like, I can't admit to these things that I'm doing wrong. Yeah. So
the relationship had ended because one is the promotion he had gotten, you know, kept him at two different areas.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? You know, now I'm still picking up them garbage cans. He said, but you know, I'm a driver. So even though we were down the street from each other, our relationship ended. You know, and like I said, the movie was amazing. The movie was totally amazing.
So what we did talk about too was, you know, when you're looking at Oscars and you're looking at multiple movies, how would you rate them? And we kind of said the Hidden Figures as well as Fences were two different kinds of movies. So when you look at them and say two different kinds of movies, but if you had to award one of them, you know, my opinion was the amount of acting and the intricacies of the movie, I think Fences was a much higher quality movie. The content, it was different. So when you see the content, it was a little more directed deeper and a more emotional that you got into Fences than you did Hidden Figures. Hidden Figures was enlightening. It was motivating. It was historically, wow, this is what we've missed. These women were amazing. This is what black people contributed to something that I've been cheering for years, and I didn't realize that we were ever part of that. So that's what made that movie amazing. But if you talk about the quality of a movie and the quality of the acting, I think Fences really stand out between the two.
Well, and like I was saying, when we talked before we actually did the podcast about both Hidden Figures and Fences. And of course, Hidden Figures have a huge connection to, you know, based on the technology and females, black females, well, females overall being human computers back in the day. And I had a totally different experience with that. But with the acting with Fences, it was much deeper. It had a lot to do with family. It didn't have the emotional feel for me because it was just so deep, and it hit in so many different areas of my life, so that I related to it more so for a family purpose, for the family, the children, you know, the halves. You know, we didn't talk about the halves, and Viola Davis should win for the leading role in Fences. She deserved it. Whereas in Hidden Figures, it was more so empowering. What I love about Hidden Figures is empowering women. It empowers women to, like, you know, raise their hand up or grab a stick or a sign and march through the streets and say, oh, you underestimate us. But if Fences wasn't there with, and I'm going to say honestly, and I think you will agree to this, if Fences wasn't competing with Hidden Figures, Hidden Figures probably would be much more.
Yeah, it would be my top.
Yeah.
You know, we still got to see Moonlight.
Yeah, that's another one. Yeah.
That was one, and it won the Golden Globes, so.
And I think that what we can do is, I think that once we do Moonlighting, I think we need to come back.
It's Moonlight.
Moonlight, excuse me. Moonlight. Sorry, y'all. But once we do Moonlight and then come back and just do a you know, comparison amongst the three would be good, too. Because right now we're comparing Fences with Hidden Figures. Mm-hmm. So when we do Moonlight, we're going to do Moonlight, Fences, and Hidden Figures. So those were the three black movies that got really nominated for the Golden Globes for, you know, now. I think that those, I mean, right now, too, we will go see Moonlight soon. But I think that once we see Moonlight, goddamn, see Moonlight. But once we see Moonlight, then I think that we could know overall what would be, you know, the best movie.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, we saying, you know, black nominated films. We didn't see Manchester by the Sea, and there's a couple of other ones that I just don't want to see. You know, that is, what is it, Heartbreak Ridge by Mel Gibson.
Mm-hmm.
And I really don't want to see that. There's a couple of other ones. I don't feel that I want to see that. But there's La La Land. I want to see that.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some movies that premise wise, acting wise, directing wise, yes, absolutely, I want to see that with a great storyline, plot and all. But some of the others I can do without. Nocturnal Animals, I really want to see as well. But when it comes to these movies, I know what I've seen. So when I do rate a movie and it's nominated, I can say, yep, you know what? Between these three, I'm okay if one of them would have won. Or when I've seen all three, nope, this one stands out. So if this one doesn't win, I think this is really being cheated. And I've been pretty much rated pretty high on the ones that we nominated. But some was surprising. Some was, you know, it can go either way. I was surprised that Moonlighting the Best Actor didn't get nominated. I mean, getting one on Moonlight. But it wasn't too surprising that Moonlight won the overall award.
Yeah, yeah. Even though they had several people who got nominated for, Best Actor, Best Supporting Actress, Best Producer, you know, so many other little areas. At the end, the Golden Globes gave it to them. So that definitely was something that, interesting. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's what made it enjoyable, because they had shows, not just movies. They had shows as well. So a lot of that was, like, really, really cool. You know, I was like, oh, okay, that's pretty good. And the thing is, when you're looking at quality movies, you want to be able to say, okay, this deserved to win. This deserved to be nominated. But some things don't deserve to be nominated.
Yes, some things don't deserve to be nominated. Because you had the nerve to ask me, okay, what do you think should have been, what was it, best TV series or something? And I'm like, I've seen them all.
Absolutely.
And he's like, it's like, oh, so what do you think? I'm like, So yeah, definitely it's like, you know, some of the award ceremonies, like I said, I think the Golden Globes is probably one of the best ones out there, because it kind of like, we kind of like seeing the ones, and the ones they recommend are really good until you get to what, the Academy Awards, is it right, babe? Academy?
No, it's the Emmy.
Emmys, okay.
So the Emmys is the TVs, and then the Oscars is...
It's the Oscars, right.
It's the movies.
Oscars, yeah.
So, I mean, if you look at a couple of different things, then you can go, oh, okay, I gotcha.
Mm-hmm. The Emmys is the TVs and the movies.
No. Emmys,
just
TV movies. TV movies.
Okay.
So, you know, you got to go from that. But, yep. So that was Fences. You know, it, really amazing movie. Very, very emotionally. You see so many different things that it's kind of like, wow, okay, I get that now. I see that, or I've lived that, or I'm living that. Even in the era that is coming about, you can see that, and it makes things really, really interesting when you're kind of going through, kind of checking it out. So I really was really excited by it. So really good. What about you, Leash? Anything on the closing?
No, just that it was a 5-star out of 5 stars.
Yeah, well, I'll say four, 4.5. The reason being, I thought it was a very good movie. 5, I'll go see it again and again and again. I'm not going to see that again. If it comes on, I'll probably watch it. But that's why I say when you put out and say, this is an amazing movie, I want to see that one again.
I will see this again and again and again. Well, so what I do with Hidden Figures again and again and again, because when I see movies that portray us as, you know, engineers and average people, and it's not ghetto, it speaks volumes to, I can relate to it and makes me want to see it more and more and more. It is, like I said, it was a really, really, really good movie.
Yep, I totally agree. So, kind of pick up on where we left off, coffeewomenintech.com. Did I say that right?
Yay! So,
coffeewomenintech.
Coffee Women in Tech, babe.
Dreadlockconnoisseur.com. So,
also, you can find me on Twitter at FineBlackWoman, FineBlk Woman.
Exactly. Or you can find me at Dreadlock Wines or Mac IT Enterprise, or when me and Alicia are doing our podcast, you'll find us with Urban L Style Cafe or Michael and Alicia. So that's where you see a lot of our tweets and a lot of our posting on our podcast. You'll see a lot of those that's on there too. But Fences, that's what we just seen, and you should be looking forward to the Moonlight podcast coming up. So thank you very much, and stay tuned for more Urban Lifestyle Cafe. Have coffee on us.
And a glass of wine.
Later.
Bye.